Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Just X's by Charity Farrell, narrated by Aaron Shedlock and Samantha Cook. Prologue. Gage. I jump out of my car, the menacing downpour coming at me sideways, and sprint into a home I frequent more than my own. Her door is unlocked. No shocker. She's expecting me. My shoes squeak against the wood floor as I charge down the hall and find her in the bedroom. She's parked on the edge of the bed, her frail body motionless, while a dangerous storm brews in her ice-cold blue eyes. Eyes pointed in my direction. "Where is he?" I scream. My voice cracks at her detached facade. "Gage." Her tone is calm, controlled. Not what any sane person would have in this situation. "Let me explain." "What did you do, Missy?" My voice grows louder, angrier, more venom flowing with every sharp, nervous word spit out. "What the fuck did you do?"
"It's all your fault, you know," she fires back. "If you had loved me, right, none of this would have happened."
"You did this out of spite for me?" I move closer at the sound of sirens in the background. Determination thrums through me to get to her before they do, and I drop to my knees, prepared to plead if need be. "Where is he?" I stress, tears biting at my eyes. Her smile is wicked.
"You'll never know."
Those four words kill me, yet satisfy her as she sings them out. Seconds later, footsteps grow louder, and the police start filing in. "Be prepared to rot in a cell for the rest of your life," are the final words I say before they haul her away.
Chapter 1. Lauren. 4 months later. I didn't set my apartment on fire! At least, I don't think I did. My nails press into my palm, an attempt to stop myself from smacking the smirk off my asshole of a landlord's arrogant face. Ronnie, said asshole, widens his grin. "Tell that to the police." "The police?" I shriek. "You called the cops?" "Sure did." He gestures toward what's left of the burned-down complex I'd called home this morning. Thankfully, the firefighters extinguished the flames and are loading their supplies back into the truck while my neighbors watch. My apartment has been reduced to rubble and ashes, my belongings scorched, and Ronnie the Dick found it necessary to point the blame at me. He chuckles. "Perfect timing. They've arrived." His threat doesn't alarm me as much as it should, and I force a smile before swinging around. This will be cake. Flirting has saved me from countless speeding tickets. They'll take one look at me and know I'm not some pyromaniac. That confidence shatters when I spot the officer stepping out of the police cruiser across the street. My breathing falters, my grin collapsing faster than panties drop after prom, and an ache plummets through my chest. Am I dreaming? I smack my cheeks, squint my eyes, pinch myself. There's no questioning it. It's him. Years have passed, but his handsome face has been etched into my memory since age 6. There will never be a time I won't recognize the sun-kissed, gorgeous man headed in my direction. More scruff covers his strong cheeks than when we were teens, and his chest is broader, his muscles larger. His almond-shaped, carbon-black eyes are pinned my way, attempting to outstare me, as if I'm a target he can't wait to hit. Vindication rides along with his all-business attitude. He remembers our history, how he begged me not to leave him, and then told me I was dead to him when I walked away. No amount of flirting will save me today. I am so fucking fucked. My father will kill me when I call for bail money. I'm frozen in place, watching him grow closer, his partner behind him. My brain tells me to make a run for it, but my legs aren't agreeing. Instead, I use this time to take in this new man. Everything, from the way he walks to his body, has changed. The navy uniform envelops his solidly built frame, advertising every modification on him. His jet-black hair has grown out from his boyish cut in high school. Hard lines fill his stunning face, and his strong jaw is clenched, a silent admission his life hasn't been a fairy tale since our breakup. This familiar yet unfamiliar man no longer looks at me with love. It's hate. Pure, unadulterated hatred. Gage Perry, Officer Gage Perry, towers over my small frame like a high-rise when he reaches me. What are you doing here? I stutter out. Fucking A, I can't even form a complete sentence without failing. Don't let him sense your nervousness. The expression on his face switches from hateful to winning, like a guy who hit the lottery. Oh, little Hellraiser, you didn't hear the news? I moved home. Disappointed you weren't my first call. Oh yeah, still hates my ass. Why didn't anyone tell me? It's more of a question to myself than him. Why would they? His voice is deep, sharp, like daggers stabbing through my chest. What I do is none of your business, is it, Lauren? You made that clear years ago. Our eye contact is broken when he glances over to Ronnie and points at me. This your arsonist? Ronnie puffs out his chest. I believe the fire started in her apartment. Gage's attention flashes back to me. That true? I can't stop myself from rolling my eyes.
That doesn't mean I was in there playing Boy Scout. I have no idea how it happened.
My voice rises as the reality of the trouble I could be in hits me. Now entering freakout mode.
I wasn't even home.
She's been harassing me for weeks to break her lease, Ronnie cuts in, nodding with each lying word.
That means I thought scorching the place was a better option?
I wave my finger in Ronnie's direction.
In case you failed to notice, liar, my stuff went up in flames too. It would have been simpler for me to write a check for a few $1,000 than to lose all my belongings.
Gage shoots a glance toward his high school best friend slash, I'm assuming, now partner, Kyle.
I think she's guilty. You?
Kyle smiles in entertainment and narrows his green eyes at me. He's the co-chair of my hate club.
I concur with you, partner. I'll take her in for questioning, Gage tells them. I know from personal experience that she enjoys seeing shit go up in flames.
His attention turns back to me, giving me a warning that I'm in for a ride from hell.
She's an expert on obliterating shit.
Ronnie rubs his hands together.
Appreciate it, officer.
You've got to be kidding me,
I shout when Gage pulls out the stainless steel handcuffs from the back of his belt.
Handcuffs? Really?
His amusement is gone, replaced with the look of a cold and calculated man. He takes a step closer.
Turn around. I'll read you your rights.
I scoff.
Not a chance in hell.
He looks to Kyle in question.
Should we add failure to cooperate to her charges?
Damn you, I hiss, my stomach rolling while I do as I was told.
The cuffs are cold when Gage slowly tightens them around my wrists.
I take it you still hate me.
Shivers run down my spine when the solid wall of his chest brushes against my back, and he leans in to whisper in my ear, his lips sliding along the lobe.
I'll hate you until the day I die.
He grips my shoulder, turns me around, and jerks me forward.
Kyle, take the landlord's statement. I'd better split so we can get this pyro to the station before she does any more damage.
Kyle chuckles while saluting him.
Sure thing.
I throw out every curse word known to man and nearly trip over my own feet while he leads me to his car.
You sure you can handle being alone with such a criminal?
A harsh laugh leaves his throat.
Oh, I can handle you just fine, sweetheart.
Everyone's attention stays on me during my profanity show. Gage opens the back door with one hand, pushes my head down for me to slide in without bumping it,
and slams the door in my face. I scope out my audience, their phones recording my episode, and shift around in a seat that had to have been made from the same material as my childhood Barbie dream car. "I hate you," I hiss when Gage slides into the driver's side. He starts the car. "Good. I fucking despise you." I slump back against the seat.
"You seriously don't believe I started that fire, do you?"
"Intentionally, no. Although, knowing your crazy ass, it wouldn't surprise me."
"Then why am I back here? At least let me ride passenger."
"Nah, it's more enjoyable watching you throw your tantrum through the rearview mirror." I fight with the handcuffs.
"This is abuse of power. I'll be filing a complaint."
"Don't get me started on abuse of power, sweetheart." I sigh and shut my mouth. An argument is what he wants. There will be no falling victim to his game. Yeah, that'll really one-up him, Lauren. He won the jackpot in X Revenge today.
Silence takes over the ride, and my back stiffens when I notice we're heading out of town. "Wait, where are we going?"
"Taking the scenic route."
"The fuck?" "Let me out, okay? You can hate me, stick pins in the voodoo doll I'm sure you have of me, toilet paper my new house when I'm no longer homeless. My mom will flip her shit if you turn me in. I could lose my job." I slam the cuffs against the seat while he ignores me. "Let me out of here, Gage Perry, or so help me God, you'll regret it. Don't think I won't make it my life's mission to make yours a living hell." I yelp, and my body slams against the steel cage in front of me when he swerves to the shoulder of the road and brakes to a hard stop.
"You want out?"
He kills the engine and steps out of the car. Seconds later, my door flies open, nearly causing me to fall out of my seat.
"Then, get out."
I scoot my butt against the seat and slowly slide out. I square my shoulders up as soon as my feet hit the pavement and shake away the loose hair from my face, blowing at the strands that aren't cooperating. The handcuffs clink when I spin around and hold my arms up behind me. "Cuffs need to be taken off," I tell him. Silence. I peek over my shoulder at his failure to move. His cold stare is replaced with amusement.
"Not happening, sweetheart." He tips his head toward the street. "Enjoy your day, Pyro."
"What?" My voice rises when I scan my surroundings and he walks back to the car. "It's 20 minutes back to town in a car. It'll take at least an hour to get back on foot." He pauses, his hand clutching the door handle, and fixes his gaze on me.
"I did what was asked of me, to let you out. Enjoy your walk. Maybe it'll give you time to think about your actions."
I shake my arms in a sad attempt to rid myself of the cuffs, like I'm damn Houdini. He slips into the cruiser, and the engine starts. Screw him. I won't allow him the pleasure of witnessing me upset. My breakdown will have to wait until he's out of sight. The car stays running in neutral while I straighten my shoulders and walk along the side of the road. It's no easy feat, walking with your hands clasped behind your back. Pride kicks inside me when I pass the cruiser, and shock fills his face at the realization that I'm not playing his games. His not pulling away confirms his plan wasn't to leave me stranded. It was a ploy to hear me beg. The passenger window rolls down.
"All right, fuck, I feel bad," he yells. "Get in."
I walk faster and force myself not to look back when he steers onto the street. "Fuck off!" For a brief moment, the thought that he might leave me stranded passes my mind. The old Gage would have never done something so cruel, but this isn't the man I loved in high school. This man is different, someone I recognize yet don't at the same time. Instead of speeding off, he cruises beside me, the car not going any faster than what I'm walking. Gage might hate me, but he'd never leave me in a possibly dangerous situation. He's been that way for as long as I can remember. It's one of the reasons I fell in love with him.
"Jesus, I forgot how goddamn stubborn you are, he shouts.
And I forgot how big of an asshole you are. Good thing I dumped your ass.
An ache rocks through my chest in regret as soon as the words leave my mouth. I look over at him, knowing they hit him harder as he goes stiff in his seat, memories and anger flashing across his face as a reminder of how much I hurt him. It was a low blow. Gage hadn't done anything wrong when I broke up with him. I didn't leave because I was unhappy. His begging for me to stay broke my heart as much as it did his. But my reason for walking away wasn't for me. Rather, it was for someone else. I ignored his calls for weeks and had my roommate lie when he'd show up at my dorm room to talk to me. After 3 weeks of rejection, he left me a voicemail telling me to never contact him again. I listened to it on repeat, hot tears rolling down my swollen cheeks, and the severity of what I'd done clung to my heart with regret.
Get in the fucking car, Lauren.
I don't stop. No! We go back and forth with our argument, and it's not until I notice the bottom of my feet are as black as the soot covering my apartment that I stop. No way in hell can I take more of this walk in my flip-flops and make it to the hospital in time for my shift. I also have to find a family member to let me crash with them until I get a new place to live.
Fine, I groan. But before I do, I want to make it clear that I'm doing it only so I don't lose my job.
He doesn't say a word when he pulls over to stop. The door slams behind him, and he circles around the car. His touch is cold when he releases me from the cuffs, and I shake my hands out, a sigh of relief leaving my chest. I shall never take these babies for granted again. No conversation is made while I settle into the seat or when he drives back into town. It's been years since I've seen him. In the past, there were no moments of silence between us. We were loud, rambunctious, lovesick teens who never shut up or got enough of each other.
Where do I drop you off? He finally asks.
I peek at him in confusion. You're not taking me to the station?
Fuck no.
A hint of a smile plays at his lips.
It'd be too much paperwork, and I hate paperwork.
I perk up in my seat in victory.
You'd better spit out an address and calm your arrogant ass down before I change my mind,
he warns at my response. My parents. I raise a brow when he snorts. What?
I'm back in town. You're staying at your parents'. A bit of nostalgia is creeping in.
The same feeling is bursting through me. I guess so. I want to punch him in the face. I want to apologize. I want him to know I regret what I did and that my heart beats only for him. But it wouldn't change anything. No amount of apologizing will reverse the betrayal and pain I caused.
Chapter 2. Gage. I don't find enjoyment in arresting people. That changed when it was the woman who smashed my heart with her small fists. It changed when it was the person I thought I'd spend the rest of my life with who bailed on me. I grew up loving Lauren Barnes, and so help me God, I'll die loving her. I'd been careful since arriving back in our hometown, Blue Beach, Iowa, avoiding all the places Kyle said she frequented. In the back of my mind, there was the reality that eventually we were bound to cross paths. This town is small, and the gossip is heavy. Although I couldn't have planned our reunion better myself. It stung, seeing her, touching her, and when I pulled out the handcuffs, I wish I could have been using them for a different reason, preferably in my bed. She'd ruined the chance of that happening years ago. Lauren made her choice to leave me, and my life has been shit since. I struggle with myself on what to feel about today's events. Relief clung to me when she told me to drop her off at her parents', not a boyfriend's. No diamond graced her finger. It was the first thing I'd looked for when handcuffing her, I won't lie. I feel some satisfaction in knowing she hasn't found love again either. I rub away the knot of tension in my neck. Why do I give a fuck? She's not why I came home. It was for my dad, for my fucking sanity, so I wouldn't charge into the Department of Corrections every time I got drunk and demand Missy pay more for what she did. My keys hit the kitchen table next to the stack of decade-old Time magazines. My father is seated next to them with a newspaper in his hand and his oxygen tank at his side. "She knows I'm back," I say. He folds up the paper and places it in front of him. "How'd it go?" "I arrested her." His sunken, chestnut-colored eyes study me before he responds. "Son, I understand you're upset with her, but was that necessary?"
"Absolutely. She set a building on fire."
He rubs his chin. "I think we both know you weren't doing it for the safety of the town." "Of course I did it for that reason." I cock my head. "I can't say it didn't give me pleasure, though." He sighs.
"Forgiveness is a brave thing, son. A man becomes strongest when he bears no malice."
"I don't want your words of wisdom. I'm not ready to bury that hatchet."
"Jesus Christ, Dad, what the hell are you doing up there?"
My head is tilted back to get a better view of him on the roof, tinkering with the satellite dish. It looks almost comical when I eye his oxygen tank following behind him while he moves the dish in different angles and directions. He grunts and catches a deep breath before answering.
"Dang satellite dish is acting up again. I've already missed 15 minutes of the game."
"And you thought it was a killer idea to climb on the roof with your tank?" How he managed to pull it off is beyond me. He shoots me a stony stare, the same one he gives when I stop him from doing physical work that is too hard on his body.
"I'm a grown man who's climbed atop roofs and buildings taller than this. I'm capable of fixing stuff myself."
Accepting his limitations on doing manual labor has been difficult for him. His health is deteriorating, and his chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is progressing. The COPD makes it harder for him to complete his daily tasks.
"You're a sick grown man," I correct,
hating that I have to remind him and hoping he doesn't see it as an insult. I stalk over to his old, rusted ladder settled on the side of the house and wiggle it, double-checking it's at least halfway steady before I climb up.
"Let me help you down, and then I'll take a look at it."
He stomps my way, wheeling his tank behind him, and stumbles in front of me when I make it to the top of the ladder.
"I got this. Stop treating me as if I were a child."
I grit my teeth.
"No, you don't got it. Now let me help you down."
He teeters forward at the same time I reach for him. My arms fly out in an attempt to catch him, but it only sends me down with him, taking the ladder with us.
Chapter 3. Lauren. Nurse Barnes, treatment room 3. Patient fell off a ladder. Natasha, the nursing director, tells me when I stroll into the ER after my brief dinner break. The hospital has been short-staffed since I started 3 years ago, and I work more than I sleep. Not that I mind it, especially now given that I'm homeless and I need all the overtime hours I can manage. "How serious?" I ask. "Ladder falls can range from minor to pretty damn ugly. You can walk in to find a patient suffering from a broken arm, or one needing facial reconstruction surgery. Welcome to ER life. You never know what will be thrown at you each shift." "Nothing too gory," she answers. "I'm guessing only stitches. Guy was helping his dad off a roof. Dad fell and took them both down. Melanie is treating the father." She grins and elbows me in the side, her voice changing into an annoying, bubbly tone. "I stuck you with the son in case you're in need of some delicious eye candy. Or a date." I smack her shoulder. "You know it's frowned upon to date patients." Not that I ever would, even if it wasn't. She winks. "I won't tell if you don't." "Stitches. Got it." Stitches are easy peasy. "Ask him if he wants to grab some drinks with those stitches," she yells to my back when I turn around. I shake my head, blowing off her comment, and knock on the exam room door before entering. Work has taken my mind off Gage's being back, and giving people stitches is relaxing to me, like yoga is to some people. I got certified in suturing instead of learning how to meditate. The voice on the other side yells for me to come in, and I don't hesitate before turning the handle and walking in, my self-proclaimed perfect nurse smile on my face. My smile falls as I shuffle back. The door slams behind me, and I steady myself against it. You've got to be kidding me. Is the universe against me this week? Gage's shoulders stiffen when we make eye contact. I rub my forehead, my eyes catching his, and take a calming breath. A sleeve on his white cotton tee is ripped, and blood, grass, and mud stains decorate the front of it. His hand holds bloody gauze to his cheek, and minor cuts and scrapes are spread along his face and chin. For someone who despises my existence, you sure are going to extreme measures to see me again, I comment before taking a deep breath and moving away from the door to grab a pair of latex gloves.
Funny, he mutters. Trust me, it was not in my plan to see you today, or ever, if I could have it my way. A smirk hits his bloody lip. I won't say I can complain about the view, though. Sexy nurse and patient is my favorite porn. Shall we give it a go?
I snap on the gloves and force a laugh while moving further into the room, which suddenly feels much smaller. You know, this is your karma for what you pulled yesterday. Don't count on any friendly bedside manner. I give him an innocent look. It's tragic that I can't have fun and stick you with a giant needle or shove something up your ass. Would have made my day. It looks like he's fighting pain to give me a challenging look. The dude is here for medical attention, and I'm giving him shit. Not cool. This is my job, and I have to do it right, no matter our history. Or the fact that I'm terrified what emotions will be drawn out when I touch him. He winces when I carefully pull his hand away from the gauze and peel the material back. I inhale the masculine scent of him, aftershave mixed with the outdoors. Like every muscle in his body, his scent has matured. His breathing quickens while I inspect the wound. It's small, not a deep laceration. Natasha was right about the stitches. It'll be an easy cut to close up.
Wishing you could stick something up my ass doesn't sound like good bedside manner, Nurse Barnes. Doubt your boss will be happy, hearing you're discriminating against patients. Public service patients, to be exact, he comments as I move away to gather my supplies.
This might hurt, I say when I'm finished and back at his side.
Shit, he says through clenched teeth when I start to irrigate his wound. You could have warned a dude.
I did. He flinches, a slight hiss escaping his lips while I work. I take my time, making sure the wound is meticulously irrigated and clean the dried blood off the scruff of his cheek. I'm discriminating against assholes, by the way, I finally correct, my attention on his cheek. Not patience,
he snorts. I'd love to see your boss's face when you use that as your argument. It's not smart to get canned from work when you're homeless.
I shrug. He won't do anything. His brow lifts when I pull away and start throwing my trash away.
You seem too cocky, Nurse Barnes. You sleeping with your boss?
Something along those lines. Fucking him. Sleeping with him after. I pat his arm. Tattle all you want. It'll only make him want to screw me more. I wouldn't be surprised if he drags me to the supply closet and gives it to me there. His jaw clenches. Exactly my goal. So what if it's not true? Your dad okay? I ask. We're in need of a subject change before he continues his interrogation and catches me in my lie. He clears his throat before nodding.
He's in the next room. Luckily, we fell in the grass. I took the biggest hit, and even though he seemed fine, I insisted he get checked out.
The sharpness of his voice guts me. My words hit him harder than his physical wound. Our banter dissolves, and he doesn't give me another look while he lies back, and I start dragging out my supplies. A knock on the door causes us both to look at it, and I grin at the sight of Jay walking in looking handsome in his blue scrubs. Jay isn't only a great doctor, he's also great looking. Hopefully, he doesn't catch on to who this patient is.
Hi, Gage. Jay says, walking into the room and extending his hand. I'm Dr. Whitman. I heard you and your father had a fall.
Gage looks at Jay with uncertainty before shaking it,
and I wish I could read his mind. Could have been worse.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?